Welcome to another episode of Three Men and a War Game, and I am so proud of myself because I remembered the name of the show this time, but I forgot to tell you who I was. So, I'm Paul, by the way.
That was, man, I can imagine how good a flirt you are, Paul. This is Chops. I am dry busting ghosts.
This is Potter, and I have brought peace, freedom, and justice, and security to my new empire.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, no. Good job killing the Yinglings.
Now I can only, now all I can see is that meme.
Yeah. I saw him on the security camera in the field killing younglings.
Oh, awesome. Yinglings, gotta love it. So, let's talk hobby real quick. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah. I'm paying some friendly ghosts for my – I have an AOS escalation coming up. It's a 500-point-per-month escalation, which is pretty aggressive. That's not really slow growth. Yep. So I'm trying to get my first 500 paint – my first 500 painted before the second.
Nice. How about you, Potter?
I finished building a third unit of speeder bikes for my Legion army, so I'm getting that all prepped. Everything's primed and ready for the airbrush to start painting that white armor.
Dude, so can we talk about this for a minute?
Yeah, go for it.
Can we stop? All right, so airbrushing. Now that you have it and you're using it, isn't it funny that, like, every army you look at, you're like, can't airbrush it, don't want to play it?
Like, yeah.
It's so lazy. And I think in skirmish games, I'm not going to feel that way. But like, if I'm playing like a good example would be 40K, right? I'm not going to buy an army where there's like intricate details on a bunch of the little fiddly bits on the models, because I just can't do it with the airbrush very well. And I'm not going to take the time.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at Necrons just because it's an airbrushable army.
Get up off my cool.
It's true, but the hidden tech, though, is that Primaris-based armies are super airbrush-friendly.
I've actually been watching a guy on YouTube, Jack of Spades, I think it is what he's called. Yeah. And, like, this guy, that's all he does is he's every tutorial that he does is a Primaris one so far that I've watched. He's got a bunch out there that I haven't watched yet, but all the ones I've watched are all, like, how to paint Black Templars, which is, like, key for me for painting my Death Watch for my kill team, like, it's all Primaris Marines, and you're right, they're super easy to airbrush.
Yeah, Tyranids would be the other example of an army that, like, you could airbrush the dicks off of them, dude. You could just, like, blow through a whole this is getting really bad, this analogy, I'm gonna stop. Anyway, you can definitely airbrush a lot of Tyranids really fast if you think about, you know, like, airbrush one strong color from the top, another color from the bottom, and then blend it with washes, like, so easy.
Yep. And that was one of the things I was watching with him, is like, you know, he goes in on every single model and he does some sort of, you know, quick shade wash over top of everything to tie all of that in together for those blends. And that's something I didn't even think about doing with airbrushing, because airbrushing is like all about doing the blends itself. And I never even thought about that. So
yeah,
I'm glad I watched those vids.
Yeah, it lets you rock some really high contrasting colors and then bring them closer together. Yep. I'm not doing it with my, I mean, you guys have seen my ghost, and you can put the picture on the Twitter, Paul, but like, that, you know, the way that I did them is that I did a strong dark tone from the top, and then I basically took a pretty dark green and did everything from the bottom, and then lightened it and then sprayed it further and further toward the edges. And I haven't done any wash because it kind of looks all spectral and spooky. But it works really well.
Yeah, no, your ghosts are looking good, man.
Thank you.
Cool. So what were we going to talk about, Paul?
We are going to talk about Wild West Exodus.
That game. Again?
Again? Aw. But it's been at least like a week.
I hear you guys like this game.
No, it's not fun. At all. There is not a growing community in North Carolina at all.
Nope. All right.
Nope.
So,
not whatsoever.
So the new hotness is rules and cards version 1.08. Am I correct?
That is a true story, sir.
So I only know that because I'm plugged into the community, but I can tell you that I haven't played a single game since the last time I mentioned playing it on the show, which was quite a while ago. And so I'm quite behind it. I'm going to need you guys to get me up on why I should still be playing Wild West Exodus.
Paul, you're gonna have to take this one, buddy, because
I've got so many answers for that. I've had family in town,
and I haven't been able to read all the new rules just yet.
Oh my god, I've got so many answers for you on that one, Chops. I mean, just right off the bat, you know, as I've been playing it more, I've realized that everything about the game is tactical decision making, and it makes it absolutely phenomenal. Just everything. Right. Everything becomes an important decision, right? From who you're going to activate to what you're going to do with them, and what cards you're going to use. But that's kind of that outlook is kind of off topic of what we wanted to talk about today, because we wanted to talk about, I guess, kind of the good things that War Cradle is doing to support this game, right? Because we're all fairly new to the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it was that you won your starter set, Chops. That was a few episodes back, a couple months ago, right?
Yep.
And then you suckered Potter and I into the game, and then you're like, I don't play it, so good luck, guys.
Well, I mean, it's only as good – you guys are in a totally separate area, and you guys have a burgeoning community. It's not like I ruined something for you guys.
No, I just played a game.
It was like, what, two episodes ago? We joked about the fact that you built a community in North Carolina and you don't even live here.
And I really like Wild West Exodus. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a fabulous game. Yep. I just am I allowed to say fabulous? I don't know. Anyway, it's a good game.
Depends on what you're doing with your wrist at the time.
Oh, come on, man. Anyway. It's so good, right? The rules are great.
He just heard so many hates right now.
Yeah. I know. Well, Paul did. Yeah, not me.
Send all complaints to P. Regina.
I think it's really great. I just haven't had a chance to play it very much because every Monday I'm playing Malifaux, and when I'm not thinking about playing Malifaux right now, I'm thinking about painting and playing Age of Sigmar. And I think that's.
And here, I thought you were going to say you were thinking about trying to keep a baby human alive.
Oh, I don't. I mean, that just comes naturally at this point. I'm just like reacting constantly to this human that will die if I'm not constantly on top of it. Or I should say, Ella is constantly on top of it.
Yeah, it's a good thing she knows what she's doing.
Oh yeah, right.
All right, so getting back to what War Cradle's doing with Wild West Exodus, that actually makes the game even better. So
I'll write that.
Yeah, they recently, as of mid-July, so I guess about 2 weeks ago, they released Rules Revision 1.08. And basically this cleaned up some rules, faxed some things, errated some things, made a whole lot of stuff better. It just shows the support that they're offering for this game. I think one of the things I want to talk about right off the bat is the fact that if you go to their website, you get a document called Studio Commentary for the rules for version 1.08, right? And one of the things that they did here is that right about the time that 1.08 released, and they released the rule book and everybody was reading it, there was like this whole slew of questions just before it of how some things interacted and how some things worked. And this document basically addresses all of these questions that were coming up on Facebook and clarifying them outside of just the straight up errata and fact. It's absolutely a brilliant way of handling this, I think.
Sounds great to me. I'm all for living games, especially if they're giving away the material for free and not charging you for it every time an update comes out.
Yeah, and you know, it's just to have that kind of clarity on things that you might look at.
Well, I mean, the one that they updated the most, I think, out of it was Quicken the Dead.
Well, this doesn't even get into things like that, right?
It doesn't go into that.
Like, this is like more some of those more little ones, like for adventure cards, right? For the Guts and Glory cards, right? You have the Glory cards that are called Restore, so you can use them and you refill your fortune on a character. right? So,
okay.
Like here, it's a question. Can I use the restore card at any time? Yes, you can, right? So basically, you can use that at any point in a turn, whether it's your turn, whether it's somebody else's turn, whether you just used the last fortune off a model and you're still getting attacked again, you can throw that down that card and load it up, right? So it's little clarifications like that that really this document is really amazing at. You know, so just really a lot of that clarification.
All right, I'm liking what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, and it actually came out before the FAQ and errata, and some people were kind of like, "Oh, this isn't quite, you know, what we wanted out of, you know, understanding the new rule book." But then once you got the actual revision guide to 1.08, it was, you know, this made a whole lot more sense. So I wanted to make sure I point that out because, you know, it was just nice because, like I said, it was right around the time where there were a lot of questions coming up on Facebook for about a week, and I felt bad for Stuart, the main guy from Wild West Exodus from War Cradle, because he was on there like every day addressing questions, saying, "No, this is how this works. No, this is how this works. No, this is how this works. Yes, you were right about this one," and stuff like that. And a couple days later, bam, here's a document that has everything that was talked about.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just like amazing attention to detail.
To detail, yeah. Especially, you know, considering the fact that, you know, nobody wants that to become a necessity. But even though, because it did, it's awesome that they didn't just confine it all to forums, you know, and like making their player base look and search and hunt to find these answers. They just make an official document and get it out to everyone ASAP. I like it.
Anytime a gaming company out, you know, goes out the way to make things easier for their player base is always going to generate, you know, those good positive feelings and make more other people want to more join the game because they see like Chop's saying, the living documents, putting it out there for free, and you're publishing the things that are clear on a place that's easy to get where it's not in the quagmire that is that fuckhole of Facebook. So
yeah, because there's no, you know, like having it on the forums is one thing because at least forums are somewhat searchable,
and you can sticky things on forums. So I mean that's an okay medium, but yeah,
it's still not the best. But you know, you have those kinds of answers out there on Facebook, and I mean they're essentially gone 2 days later.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
I mean there's just no way to keep track of that. So I thought this was a great kind of bonus touch. So let's go into one of the what I think is actually probably has the largest impact on the game right off the bat, and that's Quicken the Dead, right? So this game has, or this rule has changed a whole lot, and it's one of the unit common rules. So a lot of faces and bosses have this, and thematically, basically what it's doing is somebody who's realizing they're getting attacked and taking cover or something along those lines. And initially, way back when, in the first version of this rule set, you waited until after you failed your grit check to make this Quicken the Dead check, right? And so if you then passed your check, you ignored all the damage that was incoming, which is great, but you would become disordered. So there was a negative to it. Then they changed it because they realized that was way too powerful, you know, basically giving everybody an invulnerable save.
An extra save, yep.
Yeah, it was a bit much. So then they changed it, so this way you had to declare that you were using it before any dice are rolled. And what Chris and I discovered as we were playing, it didn't make any sense to use Quicken the Dead unless you were already disordered, right? Like if you had the ability, the common rule called metal, if you were not already disordered from that rule, it wasn't worth using Quicken the Dead because then you would just die. Because basically, metal and was using the disordered condition as a bonus wound. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
So what they're doing in this version, you're still making your check before any dice are rolled. So you have to kind of be on top of stepping in and saying, "Wait, don't roll your dice yet. I think I'm going to do something," you know, and take that moment to make your decision on what you're going to do. So the new rule, here's how it reads. It says, once per turn, unless hunkered, you may declare or this unit may declare that they will use Quicken the Dead against an enemy model's combat action that declares them as the initial target before dice are rolled. You make a quick check, and if you pass the quick check, all hits from the model's action against this unit are ignored, and this unit becomes hunkered. Okay.
That's awesome.
Right? Yeah, it's much better thematically, and I think it makes a lot more sense in how that action would go. Like, it never made sense. Like, I just ignored everything that you're doing. Why the hell am I getting a penalty for this if I basically just dodged out of the way? Like, it never made sense to me. So, like, now it makes sense. It's like, I just ignored everything. I dodged. I'm hunkered. I'm getting an extra grit because I'm dodged all your attacks. It makes a lot more sense rules-wise and thematically to me. I like it a lot.
It helps create that cinematic moment of, you know, the person who's about to get shot from behind realizing that person's coming and kind of crouching down and avoiding that shot. Right. Yep. And so that's what you're doing. And instead of, you know, before, if you passed your quick in the dead check, it was actually better for the person who was attacking because now you're closer to death. And if they have the ability to shoot you again, you're in trouble. Now, we didn't talk about hunkered, right? Hunkered basically gives you a +1 to your grit check, which is your save check. So now you're, as the defending model, you are getting a bonus. You're basically getting a free hunker.
Hunkered. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is huge. Absolutely changes the way this rule works for the better. I can't even begin to express how much better that is for the game.
Yeah, and it incentivizes using it over just a grit check, right? That's the
right. And
I actually got to play a game since this ruling came out, and I played against one of the local guys, Jesse, and we played it like this, and it made such a difference in the flow of the game and how it went in that, because you know you like you said, you were no longer disordered, so it wasn't. It was much more difficult to take out those more key characters at that point than what it used to be. Because when you were using it, then you just bring someone else and shoot them, or that person still had another attack or was able to buy more action points that you didn't realize that they could do, and then boom, you're gone. Like, this made those models stick around and made it much more fun, because then I'm not losing Jesse James too early in the game because of my Quick and the Dead succeeded. And now he's gone, and now I basically have lost the game because my boss is gone. This it much more impactful for those bosses to stick around, and I really liked it. It was a good change.
Right, and Quicken the Dead should be a benefit to the person using
correct
Quicken the Dead, and before it wasn't, right? It was essentially taking away one of your wounds. Now you're ignoring all of those attacks, so you're not taking any wounds from it. Plus you're getting hunkered, and if you have metal, then the person still has to do a wound to you and then still do another wound to you.
Yep.
Right.
You know, so it's basically giving you that extra wound, truly ignoring those attacks. So, I mean, I really can't even begin to tell you how much better that makes the game.
Oh, yeah, that seems like a huge improvement, like that. Just that, because I'll be honest with you, in the edition that I was playing, I had a hard time justifying ever using it. So,
right, yeah, exactly. It was like, okay, well, why would I use this? Other than if I'm already on the verge of death, it's not worth using.
Right.
Right, and with the timing of when you had to declare that you were going to use it, you couldn't wait and see. I mean, with being able to wait and see if you failed the check or not, I could see why you would have a bit of negativity to the result. Right, because that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. You know, an invulnerable save, like an extra invulnerable save, kind of breaks Wildlust Exodus because of how deadly it's supposed to be.
Right.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And to me, it makes sense that it's happening before the shots. Like, doing it after the fact doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're dodging it, you know, you don't even know if those shots are coming in, and you know, it just visually it makes a whole lot more sense. So the second major change, and this one's interesting because this one did come up a whole lot on the Dark Council Facebook group going into this 1.08 time period. And this has to do with the mercenaries, because there was some confusion as to what models could be taken and what models could not be taken and how they could be taken, right? So they totally reworked it and came up with a new term that I think. So they're completely taking out the mercenaries section, and they're adding in a section called Allied Posses. Okay, here's the way it reads. It says, most outlaw theme posses and some factions theme posses can be included in other factions' forces. These alliances are detailed on each boss's theme card. If the posse is taken in a force that its boss does not belong to, it is considered an allied posse. When including allied bosses with their posses in another faction, you may not have more allied posses than you have bosses belonging to the main faction. Okay, so basically what that's telling you is that some of the bosses on their hiring cards have multiple factions.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the way this is reading is that if they have that on their card, they are technically part of that faction.
Faction.
Okay, so they're still a faction boss. All the other outlaw theme posses are then considered allied posses. Okay, so you can still take them. Because the way it was reading before was that you couldn't take the outlaw bosses unless they had the icon that matched your faction.
So if I'm going, you know, so I play Outlaw, so this is going to be a little bit less for me, but I'm going to use Stonewall Jackson as a priority example for this. So for Stonewall Jackson's boss card, it says he's an outlaw, he's a Confederate, he's mercenary, and he's tainted. So which means he could be taken in a mercenary theme list and a tainted theme list as well as his Confederate theme list.
No. We're talking overall factions. Right. So when you look at the hiring cards that are available, he has,
he's got the reds. He's got the,
I think it depends on the icon.
Yeah, you're right. It's got the faction icon.
He's got the Liberty icon.
Right. Which is Outlaws. Right. Outlaws. So he can be hired in Outlaws. He's considered an outlaw, but he can be taken in other factions as an allied boss. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Right. No, so does. Instead of limiting that hiring pool, it's actually making it bigger. Right. Because before the way it was worded, it really cut back on what you could actually do and who you could hire. So that really opens up a lot of things. And I believe somewhere on Stonewall Jackson, it says like, you know, he can't be included in an army with Union models. Because you can't have him playing with the Union. That makes no sense.
Yeah, that would make
sense. Right. Yep. So, but then, you know, like, it makes sense for him to be loosely allied with Warrior Nation. Right? Because you don't want Warrior Nation straight up, fighting the Union, since the Union are basically trying to wipe them out. You know, it would make sense that Stonewall would join up with Walks Looking and fight off the Union.
Yeah, and the same with the Hex. I mean, he's a tainted model, so it makes sense for him working
with
the Hex.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they made some small changes to some of the unit cards.
That's what I was just gonna say, because now, like that, as far as actual errata goes, that's one of the big. Those are the two huge changes that really affect the gameplay.
No, they changed stun as well too. But I'm not sure how stun read before, because I don't have the card in front of me. But I know they changed. I know they changed that status effect as well too.
Target model gains the stunned,
which is a pretty
weapons
big
quality
one.
Stun replaced if a non-vehicle or construct initial target passes a grit check by a hit from this weapon. Target model gains the stunned condition. The model hit is already stunned, then the hit gains the lethal quality. I'm wondering if it changed from pass to fail or from fail to pass.
Well, the stun condition specifically says a model affected by in the 1.0 rules, it says a model affected by the stun condition suffers a -1 penalty to all attributes, excluding limit, to a minimum of 1. The condition is removed at the start of the unit's next activation. A unit that has a machine, a structure, or artifact traits cannot normally be stunned. So I would have to look at what stunned said in prior to 1.0 to see, or 1.8, to see how it changed.
I don't have my rule book with me. Wait, maybe I do. This is when we get to good radio. All right, let's see. Let me dig this up. Because this could make... Yeah, live, good radio. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.
Okay, do, do, we don't do, need the music.
Shush, I like my music. All right, page 45 it says. Yeah, I don't know where the change on that is. Let's see. What's page 45? Passes a crit check by a hit from this weapon, the model gains the stun condition. I don't see what the change is.
So the stun condition...
Right, but we're looking at weapon quality. Crit check by...
No, it's the stun condition itself that's changed.
No, it's the weapon quality.
Oh, here it is. So here's the change. So the way the stun used to read is a model affected by the stun condition suffers a -1 penalty to all attributes excluding limit to a minimum of 1. A unit that is a machine, structure, artifact trait cannot normally be stunned. Stun used not to be able to be removed except for through fortune. Now it reads that it's removed at the beginning of the model's next turn.
Oh, that's pretty big difference.
That's a huge change.
That is actually quite important.
Yes.
Because
it's just unfortunately a lot of the games that we have played, we stunned has really never come into consideration.
Right.
So far of what we've played.
I've had to use it in one game against Paul Plunge. And yeah, it sucked to be stunned.
Yeah. I almost ran into it in my game against Jesse the other day because the Confederate Terminator was trying to trample me since he basically turns into a freaking... But he missed, thank God. He was trying to kill Nakano. Oh, I didn't want,
I want
to
that.
Die.
All right, so real quick, going on. So those are like the major changes to the fact. I think a lot of the other things that they changed with 1.08 were lifestyle improvements.
Yeah, I think there were just more clarifications of things.
Because I think one of the most important things that they did was that in the rule book, it always talked about how every model, at the very least, had a basic melee attack. And there were stats for it, right? And it was just basically a rate of attack 1 with no pierce, but it was never on anybody's cards.
Correct.
And I was... They are now. And that makes such a difference because I was even listening to one of our first episode on Wild West Exodus. And one of the things that you said, Chris, was none of my guys except for Jesse James have a melee attack. And I was thinking, well,
yep,
sure, because it's not on the card. Why would you think about it? All right. But now you can remember that your guys stuck in combat can at least take some type of swing and force a grit check, and as we all know from 40K, if you have a problem, throw some dice at it.
Yep, sure.
You know, so you could even if it's the worst attack in the world, throw some dice at it. You might get lucky. The other quality of life change they made was putting all of the weapon quality on the weapon upgrade cards.
Oh, they did that. That's
yes.
Good. I didn't realize they had done that, though. That's a good change.
It is a fantastic change because let me tell you how many times I forgot that my Gatling gun was brutal and lethal. Or not lethal, linked.
Linked, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because brutal and linked together is a hell of an ability on something that has a rate of attack 3. Right? Because you're rerolling anything that you miss with. And if you do hit, you're getting a bonus hit.
Yeah.
Right. So not seeing that on those cards, out of sight, out of mind. So I think those quality of life changes are absolutely huge for the game. Right. So kind of acknowledging that.
Yeah, I mean, and so then they also went through and upgraded some, you know, some stats and abilities on some of the guards, like, you know, Stonewall Jackson. And I'll keep going to him because he's my new boss and I'm playing him right now. But his custom pistol went from, he had close work on it and that was it. His custom pistol now has ammo clip and close work. It has also gone up from Pierce 2 to Pierce 4.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And if you're playing the game, you know that Pierce 4 is the magic number.
That is the magic number.
Right, because once you get to Pierce 4, you start ignoring all of your abilities that keep you alive.
Yep, it ignores metal, it ignores all that stuff.
Tough, so, stun, basically everybody that has an ability that says you get to ignore, you know, grit modifiers, once you get to Pierce minus 4, they're gone.
It's not true anymore.
So I mean, I was already at a point where, because of the amount of buffing and stuff that Stonewall does, not only for his Confederates but for all of his buddies around him, that he was becoming almost an auto include as a boss in my 1500 point list. He's even more so now, because now he can actually start doing some damage on his own. And yeah, that to me, that's a good change for that model. But I'm a little biased.
Yeah, you and Jesse both are in love with Stonewall, but he's a great character.
He's such a good support piece, especially like with tying into Jesse James. And again, I haven't gone outside of Jesse James and Stonewall yet. But for him, he buffs the Jesse James theme posse so well. It's not even funny. And actually playing the last two games against Jesse, like, I've discovered so much more of what the Confederates can do. And now that Jesse pointed out to me that a Confederate Terminator is actually a mercenary model, I can take him in a Jesse James theme list is even much more. The army at building ideas are going through my head now. So
yeah, I don't know that I approve of that.
No, I do. I was so glad he pointed that out to me. But I mean, it's he's a great model. And I know they've added a couple things. They showed a lot of the new and upcoming unreleased models, like Annabelle Hamilton, and I think Hex got some legendary model that doesn't even have like a base model yet.
Yeah, everybody has one of those. And I'd reached out to Stuart about that because I thought it was weird, right? You know, we come from War Machine, we come from Guild Ball, and everybody that has an epic version or a legend or veteran version, there's all a regular version, right? So, but in this game, apparently you can be legendary without having a regular model.
Yeah, and they've put out the model sculpt, the 3D rendering for Wikasasani or... Mm-hmm. However the hell you pronounce that name for the Hex, and that's just a beautiful sculpt as well, too. Artwork is demonic as fuck. It makes me think of a death metal band, but...
You know that's Walk's Looking,
the
right?
The model's great. Yeah. I'm sorry,
You know that's Walk's Looking, right? The Wakasani?
That's Walk... No, I did not know that was Walks on Water.
Yeah, so you want a little fluff story?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so
I do.
So basically with you almost made me say Walks on Water. with Walks Looking, one of the things that happened with the Warrior Nation in general is they're very big on spirit animals, right? So she was kind of manipulated by the Hex into believing that she was going to have a spirit animal. But what it was the Hex. And basically corrupted her, as the Hex will do, right? So her dad went and saved her, and he performed a ritual. And basically what he did was he separated out the corrupted part of her and the not corrupted part of her, right? So the corrupted part of her becomes Wakasani and goes off and runs with the Hex now, right? But she's still pure.
Interesting.
But what's interesting is since it's essentially a split soul, a split body, they're constantly fighting with themselves because they're drawn to each other because they want to reform and become one.
Makes sense.
That's cool. Yeah, so it's a really cool fluff way of doing that and having her be out there. Yeah. So, I mean, so if you,
yeah, that's pretty
if, and if you look at that model, she's wearing, regular walks lookings close.
Yeah. Now that you pointed it out to me that it's walks looking, I can see that in the artwork. Yep.
Yeah. You can see, I mean, if you look at walks looking, it's her shirt with those strings, keeping in her really ridiculous, gigantic boobs.
No, I can definitely see that now that you've pointed out. That's really cool. That's one thing I need to get into. Like, I've avoided reading some of the fluff for Wild West Exists because of the fact that I'm not a big Western fan. But you know, that your little story has intrigued me.
I think it's one of the neater stories that we've heard so far, or at least that I've discovered so far. Apparently there's
so maybe that's a new segment we've got is story time with Paul, and he brings us in with the fluff of the game.
I can do that. I love the fluff of all the games. Next time I'll tell you about the order. But yeah, so
next time on 3 Men in a War Game.
so they're doing cool stuff like that, right? So all those connections are really cool. So going back to the 1.08, the lifestyle changes or the quality of life changes are just going to make the game even better. And one of the cool things that I discovered, I ordered a Divine Intervention posse, right? Which was one of the newer ones. All of the cards that came with it were 1.08.
Already?
Nice. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, so I have a nice actual printed card that is the conditions and common rules all right there on a really nice factory card.
Now, did you order it directly from Warcraft?
No, I got it from Scott at Gamers Armory. So apparently they had already had 1.08 figured out, and when they released these guys at end of June or early July releases, they had already had the 1.08 cards in there.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, so they were, like I said, they were absolutely on top of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, because I'm still debating my next purchases for the game because I want to expand my posse, but I'm not sure where to go.
Yeah, I think War Cradle is one of the best companies out there for just being on top of their stuff with their releases. They're just so on top of it.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is my first time experiencing, purchasing a game through them, so that's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea that it was going to have the 1.08 cards in it. So, I mean, that just made it even cooler.
Yeah, I would have gone into it assuming it didn't, right? Like,
right, yeah. Yeah. I was just like, all right, this is just going to be old stuff, no big deal. And I popped it open, then...
Yeah, like when Privateer Press went from, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, like none of their stuff had any of the new, for a while, they were still getting rid of the old stock. And then when the new stock came in, then that stuff had the new cards.
Yep.
Pretty sweet.
Yep. So, Chops, you said you haven't been playing very much of this, huh?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's a bummer. any reason I don't remember if we talked about it live on air, if we were talking about it preambly.
It's really just the getting the local interest. Like, so, our Malifaux meta, it seems like we pick people up pretty regularly. And a lot of the players that we have in the meta are pretty, they're not new, but they're all still very much like in love with Malifaux. Mm-hmm. So, and you got to know, once you've got a game and you've got people that are playing it, it's pretty hard to unstick people from it. And I'm not going to be the guy that does it, right? I'm not there. As much as I hype other games, on Malifaux night, I show up there and I observe the sanctity of the game that everyone's loving and playing. And for that reason, that's just, that's what I've been spending my time playing is Malifaux. Even though I'm also working on busting myself into the local Games Workshop meta with playing AOS, I think I'll take some opportunity to say, hey, you guys, you want to try this cool Wild West game that I've got? but until that time, I'm happy to paint a model or two here and there. And I've almost painted the entire Red Oak box now, so I can do demos with all painted models, which helps. Nice. And I plan on doing it, and I plan on keeping up with the rules, but it's mostly just that I haven't had a chance to play in the local community, and that's really all it is.
Yeah. Chris, how about you? Have you been getting much of the gaming in with it, or?
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I got the last two games I played. I've actually played against Jesse, because he's kind of thrown his weight right into it, pretty big. But I know, yeah, and it's good. I'm glad he's enjoying the game. And I have played. We played a small battle box. He just basic or what a battle box. Small game. He basically bought Stonewall Jackson. He put the models together, and he built that posse, and we played that. So we played a small game with that. And then, like, the next time I saw him, he had, you know, Dixie Snipers, Dixie Scouts, like, all these new models. I was like, holy shit, man. He definitely really went in. And we played 1,000 Point on that one, and the game was completely different for him. Yeah, he got introduced to the Nakano, the Ninja Samurai. And she took out Stonewall and I think his Terminator in one turn.
Oh, good God.
Well, because I got lucky. I had like four action points that I pulled, and then I had a refresh on me, so I refreshed all of her fortune. And I just kept buying because I pulled two charges off, so I got a move and an attack at that. And then she only gets to buy her secondary attacks for one AP instead of two, like normal. So she was just wailing. I got to see truly what she was built for, and it was just nothing but murder and mayhem.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
So very glad Paul Plunge was able to pick that up for me. You know, when he went out and got all of us that, she was definitely a great addition to add to my Merc army.
Yeah, and he's heading out to Gen Con, so if you need anything else, let him know.
I know. I'm looking.
He might be ninja shopping.
I'm looking. If they honestly, the only thing that I definitely would want is if the model was released yet was Jim Peterson.
Is that the Deadpool guy?
That's Deadpool. But his new model's not out yet, so I'm going to wait for his new model.
So, one of the things, talking about new models, I just found this out today, and I thought this was pretty cool. Have either of you guys looked at the new posse set for the Infernal Investigations?
Yes.
Have you noticed that there's a fucking mechanical horse?
Yes.
Oh, is that the one that... Oh!
So...
Yes. Yeah. I did see that.
I found out what the deal with him is. So we're going back to Paul's story time. So apparently he was just a regular old mechanical horse, right? And what ended up happening is that technology changed. And so everybody started kind of working more with the bikes and stuff that we see more now. So the horses kind of went and became obsolete, right? But what ends up happening is that he was still pretty well put together. So they kept using him and they kept upgrading him. And as he went on more time, he became sentient. So now instead of just being a horse that people were riding on, he fucking hangs out with a dude that's basically a Jedi. If you look at the model of the other guy in that set, it's a Jedi.
Is that Furio Montoya?
Yeah, yep.
I wonder what they got that reference from. That's not a Princess Bride reference if I haven't seen one lately.
No, not at all. Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, the thing that... So, like, this posse, when I first saw it coming out... God, what was it? It was one of the cons out in England, wasn't it?
Yeah, yep. Salute, I think it showed up.
Yeah, it was a salute. Okay, whichever it was, like, I saw this posse, and this might be what gets me into Lawmen, because that fucking horse is straight from Brave Star, which is one of my all-time guilty pleasure loves of from when I was a child. And I think Paul Plunge, actually, when I was talking to him about it, he said he actually talked to the sculptor, and that's exactly what he pulled the reference from, was from Brave Star.
Well, then you absolutely need that model.
Yes, I do. And I will have to find a Native American guy from one of the factions to run with them, because that will be that's Brave Star. I've got to build it. I've got to do it.
Yeah, the model I like is the jetpack one from that crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's a nice one too.
Yeah, I just like the fact that there's a freaking mechanical sentient anthropomorphic horse.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. All right. Well, that pretty much covers the 1.08 changes, quality of life and all that stuff. So, Chops, any last thoughts on Wild West Exodus 1.08?
Just that I need to definitely grab some more. I need to read the rules. And I need to grab some more models and paint them up.
Yeah, paint them up. Here's what I recommend. When you're there, when you're at game night, just have them out on the table.
Yeah, that's the deal.
Have people come over and be like, what's that?
Right.
You know, and then you can show them a quick demo and call it a day. And, you know, once people start thinking about a second game or looking for a little bit of a change for variety, nail them with it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good call.
Potter, any last thoughts on Wild West Exodus version 1.08?
No, I'm excited about the changes that they've made so far. You know, like I said, we got to try some out already in one of our games, and I definitely thought that they were good additions to the game. So I'm happy, glad to see War Cradles making it a living game. That's always a positive thing for a game in my mind.
Awesome, and for me, it's right now it's still the only thing I want to play, and this just makes it even better knowing that they're. Supporting it this way and making it better.
I'm glad that it like became your number one game. That's just so cool that it, you know, like this little game can come out of nowhere and just capture your imagination.
It absolutely blindsided me. You know, I said before that I had looked at it when it was baiting and I was like, nope, too many common rules, not going to get involved with that. And, now I sit there and I look at it, and every time I play it, it's like watching a movie in my brain. And that's what does it for me.
Yeah, that's about the highest praise you can give a minis game.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think one of the other few games that really had this much visual was Infinity.
That's high praise, man.
It is, because there is no game as cinematic as Infinity, really.
No, I agree with that.
You know, as for all its warts, there's just pure brilliance. So, all right, everybody, if you are on the Twitterverse, give us a follow at 3MenInAWarGame. It's the number 3, not the word. We also have Facebook presence, so you can find us there. Give us a like. We'll make some awesome content, and. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Fuck your page, Potter.